From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson, broadcasting from NPR West today in Culver City, California, and this is Here and Now. And in a few moments, we will check in on the drought, the film industry, and the earthquake that happened earlier this week here in Los Angeles with the mayor of this city, Eric Garcetti.
Okay, but first to Crimea. Today, Crimean officials blocked Ukrainian officials who were headed to the peninsula to defuse tensions, and the Ukrainian Navy commander was detained after first pro-Russian militiamen and then Russian troops seized control of the Ukrainian naval headquarters in Sevastopol and replaced the Ukrainian flag with the Russian flag. Earlier today, speaking to the BBC, Ukraine's Deputy Foreign Minister Danilo Lukivsky appealed to Europe for help beyond sanctions.
We cannot tolerate this kind of politics and aggression. And this is not only about Ukraine. We are standing on the front, but this is about all of us. So let's be together to have a clear roadmap how to deal with it.
NPR's Gregory Warner is in the Crimean capital, Simferopol. Gregory, so tell us more. We have militiamen first, then Russian troops. What is happening at the naval base in Sevastopol?
Well, I think what's really important to understand is all the different players here. We know, of course, there's the Russian forces who are occupying Crimea, and we know about the Ukrainians in Kiev. But then there are these forces called the self-defense forces, pro-Crimean or pro-Russian Crimean self-defense forces. With these stormings of the bases, what ends up happening is these Crimean militia groups will storm a base, and then Russian soldiers will come and then take over. It's very concerning for people in Crimea what will happen next to these militia groups, because they are kind of they work with criminal tactics and they're basically unchecked.
Well, given that, what is the sense there? Who is running Crimea?
I just put that question actually to somebody, or I said, who's doing law and order here? Right now, it's a very strange, someone called it a normal, not normal situation. You have lots and lots of different groups walking around. You have elite special forces, Cossacks, Russian bikers. Some, of course, see these people as protectors. Absolutely. Some see them as occupiers. And the mood is mixed. There's all kinds of feelings about what's going to happen to these soldiers, these Ukrainian soldiers who are being effectively held hostage in the bases. Ukrainians here, some of them want them to fight and hold their ground. Others say, no, just let them go home. Nobody really knows what to do.
Well, some of the Ukrainian naval personnel were seen leaving the base. Troops are still there, as you said. And then there are reports that the commander was detained. So obviously tensions there. And is Crimea, does it feel like it's shutting down? Because we're also hearing these reports of Ukrainian officials wanting to come to have talks and defuse the situation and being kept out. Kept from crossing into Crimea from the western part of the state. So do you have a sense of Crimea insulating itself?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I would say. It's really a sense of isolation, and it's informational isolation. The Ukrainian TV channels have been cut off. It's physical isolation, and it's spiritual isolation because of the separatist rhetoric that's been fomented certainly over the past week or really 3 weeks. And this isolation, of course, is intentional. I think throughout this past week, 3 weeks, we've seen thuggish tactics used by the Crimean authorities and really to create the sense that this is already a done deal. Even before the referendum vote on Sunday, the Crimean authorities wanted to make it absolutely clear that this was essentially part of Russia. They made the ruble the currency before Russia even annexed this peninsula. So this refusal to allow the Minister of Defense to enter is just part of that strategy. It's hey, there is no negotiation. We are Crimea, and what we say goes. That's been their message throughout.
And Greg, is there a sense of what happens next? What's the expectation? Aid coming into Crimea? How do people think their lives are going to change next?
I talked to one guy. He said, hey, we just woke up in a different country. And you know, it's hard to minimize it, but frankly, for many people, it doesn't much matter. It's a peninsula that's very affiliated with Russia. People are very comfortable with Russia. And for a lot of people, it's just a minor inconvenience. But for an important minority, it's extremely scary what's happening. There are a couple of different minority groups, most significantly most significantly the Crimean Tatars. That's a Muslim group. They had a very bad experience under the Soviet Union, and they do not like Russia. They were very supportive of Ukraine, and they boycotted the referendum. So they feel that they're going to be targets. In fact, some of them have already been targeted. And then in terms of people who are Ukrainian patriots who are still living in Crimea, of which there are quite a few, we just learned yesterday that they're going to have to change their passports over to Russia. And if they don't want to, they have to be put on a special list. They're concerned that that special list could be used to blackmail them or blacklist them or worse. People have been reportedly disappeared. There have been a number of incidents where journalists or activists are suddenly missing and the authorities aren't saying what happened to them.
NPR's Gregory Warner in Simferopol in Crimea. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robin.